Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a recommended reading episode. So we're going to be talking about could be a one-shot, could be a graphic novel, just some books that we've read recently or in the past that we would like to recommend to you. And joining me on this episode, I have Nick and Jay. They are a couple of the contributors that are colleagues of mine over at lrmonline.com. So thanks for joining me, gentlemen.
Of course.
You bet.
And hopefully they're going to be coming on a regular basis or semi-regular basis to join me and to kind of give you listeners a chance to get some different perspectives. So we will be doing an introductory episode so you can get to know them very, very soon. But for purposes of this, because we have, you know, quite a few books to talk about, we're gonna dive right into it. So let me start out with my first pick. It's Green Lantern Earth One from writers Karina Bechko and Gabriel Hardman. Gabriel Hardman also did the art on the book, and the colors were by Jordan Boyd. So for those not familiar, this take on Green Lantern, if you will, fits in with the other Earth One graphic novels or one-shots that DC has put out over, I guess it's been about the last 4 years now. And they're a bit more grounded in reality, if that's a thing, with comic book superheroes. So they started off with Superman. Then they did Batman. There's been a Wonder Woman volume, Teen Titans. There's a rumored Aquaman one from Francis Manapul, although we haven't heard much other than the initial announcement of that at San Diego Comic-Con a few years back. So I got really excited when I heard they were going to do a Green Lantern Earth One because, again, they really tend to be a little more grounded. They're not quite so fantastical. They don't tie into the main DC universe proper. That's kind of its own part of the DC multiverse where, as I said, things seem to be a little more grounded in reality. And they're also not beholden to any kind of continuity or any stories that have gone on before. So I feel like they're really great books for new readers or somebody who's trying to familiarize themselves with these characters. That being said, you don't need to know anything about Green Lantern or Wonder Woman or Batman or Superman, any of the characters, really. Everything you need is right there in the volumes themselves. And the other thing that's really cool about it is the stories are very much self-contained, right? So there have been 3 volumes of Earth One Superman so far, and you don't need to have read Volume 1 to go read Volume 2 of Superman, or have read 1 and 2 to go read Volume 3. So they're all self-contained stories, and they're all really easy to pick up on. And the other thing that's really cool is that the creators really have a lot of freedom to tell the story that they want to tell because, again, they're not held back by any kind of continuity in the regular DC universe. So, as I said, I was very excited for Green Lantern Earth One. Karina and Gabriel had been working on it for a very long time. Gabriel Hardman, he's one of the many comic creators I follow on Twitter, and he had been posting art from time to time. And I was like, man, I really cannot wait to get my hands on this book. And I read it, blown away by it. I think I read it the day that I got it, and then I read it the next day. And then just this last weekend, I read it again. So it's only been out 2 weeks. I've read it 3 times. I got more out of it each time. And they really do a great job of capturing kind of the spirit of Hal Jordan, but at the same time, it's a completely new and different take. It's set little in the future on Earth, and Hal had previously been an astronaut for NASA. He was kind of running away from some things as we learned as the story progresses, and he's working as kind of a prospector, if you will, out in the asteroid field, trying to find metals to use for smartphones and computers and technology and all that kind of stuff. He stumbles across the ring in a crashed spaceship, Abin Sur. So again, taking some pieces of the original and classic Hal Jordan Green Lantern story, but kind of putting a new spin on it. There's also a Manhunter in that ship that he ends up battling, and things kind of progress from there. And I don't want to spoil it because I want you to read it, but the Green Lantern core, the state of the core when Hal Jordan finds the ring and kind of discovers and starts learning about the larger universe, the bigger universe, the Green Lantern core is not exactly in good repair, I'm going to put it that way. And so throughout the course of the book, Hal, he shows his heroism, but he also shows that he's somewhat of an everyman. And that's kind of the take that Karina and Gabriel wanted to have with this story. And one of the things they've talked about in several interviews they've done is in this take on the story, Hal Jordan is just a regular guy who kind of finds the ring and takes it upon himself to try to do something more, try to be something more than he has been in the past. And we really see him kind of grow as a character as the series progresses. So in that way, it's very much a departure from the previous iterations of Green Lanterns with the ring seeking out. Originally, it was those without fear. Then they eventually got changed by Geoff Johns to those that had the ability to overcome great fear. None of that is really present in this story. It's just a regular everyday guy who, in a way, recruits regular everyday other, I don't want to say guys because they're like alien, regular everyday other aliens that don't see themselves as heroes or don't have any special training or some great ability to overcome fear, but they prove themselves worthy in a way. And so I haven't heard any sales numbers. I haven't really heard much on the reception of this book. When DC first launched the Earth One line, it was brand new and it was shiny and it got a lot more attention. And I feel like now it's – I mean, they've got so many different imprints and titles going on that it's kind of getting lost in all the noise a little bit. But I hope that we do get a volume two because it's incredible. The art by Hardman – you know, I'm not the biggest fan of his style. It's a little sketchy. You know, I prefer my art to be a little more clean. But it does suit this story well because it gives – it's a little dirty, right? It's a little run down. And that's kind of the feel of the world that we're introduced to in the story. So very much the everyman quality comes through. Again, kind of the run – things are run down. Things are old. They're not – you know, it's not a bright, shiny future a la Star Trek or something like that, right? It's much more Millennium Falcon than Starship Enterprise. So – for that reason, Hardman's art does fit the book very well. And the colors by Jordan Boyd have it's more of a muted palette, except for the green, which shines very brightly, you know, as it should. It's a Green Lantern book. But otherwise, the colors tend to be a little muted, a little washed out, which, again, kind of fits that slightly dystopian setting that we're in the feeling that things are kind of running down, running out of time. So I do hope we get a second volume. I'd be very interested to see where the story goes from here. I think Karina Bechko and Gabriel Hardman as storytellers have left it open to that, especially with kind of the last panel and the last page. So I hope that we get more. I think that the whole Earth One concept is a good one because, again, it's a way to capture the essence of these characters in a single volume without any condition or need to go back and you know, read, in some cases, 75 years of history for Superman or 80 years of history for Superman to understand where he's at now. I mean, you really don't need to go back that far, but if you wanted to understand Superman now, but you get my point, right? You don't need to go back and even, I want to read the Batman Earth One titles. Let me go back and read Rebirth Batman or Scott Snyder's run on Batman, you know, 50 plus issues to understand the character. None of that's needed. It's all self-contained right here in these issues. So that's my first recommendation, Green Lantern Earth One. I'm sure you can still find it at your comic shops. As I said, it only came out a few weeks ago. All right, Nick, what's your first book that you're going to recommend or title, I should say?
Yeah, my first title is actually my favorite post-Secret Empire title. So you can hold that against me if everyone hates Secret Empire as much as it feels like people hate it. But I like Tales of Suspense featuring Hawkeye and Winter Soldier. It starts with issue 100 and runs through 104, though they've only released the first four so far. It's really – well, I can spoil Secret Empire, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%, 100%.
Okay. Well, in Secret Empire, as Deadpool calls him, Steve Rogers kills Black Widow. So this comic is about Hawkeye seeking out Black Widow. He thinks she's alive due to a bunch of Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. hits that feel like her targets. So he sets out to find her. And meanwhile, Winter Soldier sets out to find whoever he thinks is imitating Black Widow, because he doesn't believe in that in any circumstances Black Widow's still alive after the events of Secret Empire. So it becomes a buddy book with Hawkeye and Winter Soldier, which I think is one of the more entertaining combinations or duos I've seen in comics recently. And it's interesting that the first issue is all told from Hawkeye's perspective. All like the internal monologue is Hawkeye as he as he both kind of dislikes and respects Winter Soldier. Like he sees Winter Soldier's positives and his negatives, that he's too serious, blah, blah, blah. Hawkeye's more fun. And then the second issue, 101, switches into Winter Soldier's perspective, where he thinks Hawkeye's too goofy, but he respects his skills. It's an interesting comic where, it starts with Hawkeye looking into things. Eventually, Winter Soldier's brought in. There are a bunch of hits that, again, look like they're done by Black Widow. Anytime they seem to be... What's kind of annoying about it is what's happened in the first four issues is anytime they seem to be close to a lead, that lead gets assassinated while they're in the room, sort of deal. So it's kind of a, you know, chase in that way, and they keep getting more leads and they keep seeing them die. And I don't know how many issues I should go into as not to spoil it, but let's see what else do I have. Just them following leads to see if Black Widow is or is not still alive, and it's. Yeah, I guess that's what I like. Spider-Man, Deadpool, but it's probably my favorite dynamic in comics right now. The writing by Matthew Rosenberg is pretty good. The art I'm kind of mixed on by Travel Foreman. It's sometimes it has more of an anime type style. It's not really the best way to describe it. Some comics I think look a little bit too much like anime or manga, which I'm not as big a fan of. Like a recent Constantine run. I think it was after Convergence had that look. It might be current Constantine as part of Rebirth. But I do like the way a lot of the action is drawn, very like kinetic. And I'm a big fan of the way Winter Soldier's arm is drawn, because that's always an interesting detail in the movies, is how his arm kind of moves. And it's really interesting. I don't think I want to go too much farther into the story. It's not to spoil.
So is it money? Do you feel like it's kind of the way they play off each other is kind of buddy cop, or is it more?
It is. It's very buddy cop, with Hawkeye being the goofier one and Winter Soldier being like down to business. And they both are seeking the same thing, but they're both looking to find out who it is. But one believes it's Black Widow. One does not believe it's Black Widow. So they play off each other that way as well. Of course, there are multiple Black Widows in this story, but I'm talking about Natasha Romanoff, of course. It's a fun buddy comic.
I don't know how familiar you are with the history of Black Widow. So going back to, you know, early days of Avengers and Hawkeye, and when Black Widow was introduced, I mean, they had something going on there. So I can completely understand Hawkeye wanting to get to the bottom of this. I don't know. I haven't read a lot. You know, Winter Soldier came on the scene kind of in that dark space for me where I'm kind of blank on not blank completely, but you know, I kind of fell off the Marvel wagon when the first Civil War ended, and Winter Soldier kind of came along in that time, and that's where he's been a major character. So I'm not familiar with the kind of the connection between
they've dated also.
They have. Okay.
That's one of the ideas behind the comic that I forgot to mention, is they both dated Black Widow recently.
So they
also both kind of hate each other for that reason, hating each other for being like different, but they also have to work together, and they're both impressed with each other's skills. So it is like the ideal, like Marvel buddy pairing.
Throw two of her ex-boyfriends together to try to get to the bottom. Is she dead? Is she not? Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
I'm in.
It's fun for legacy. Like it's one of the funner legacy titles that I've come out.
I'm in, Nick. You convinced me. Good pick. I definitely will be checking it out. Although I may wait until all the issues are out so I can read it all in one sitting. Sometimes I'd like to do that.
I think it's just five. So 104 next month should be the last issue, I think, of the storyline.
Okay, right on. All right. Up next, we have Jay. What's your first pick, Jay?
Hey, how's it going? My first pick would be Old Man Hawkeye by Marvel. The first time I actually see the character is with the Logan run, Wolverine 66 to 72, where it's the futuristic. And, of course, you know, Marvel has Old Man Logan series, and now he's the main character in that universe. The reason I like it is because you want to know more about Hawkeye and, you know, how he came about. So they go in the future, and the first book, you know, shows that you can actually still see, because if you read the book, or if you haven't, Hawkeye in the future becomes blind. So it kind of starts from there, how he becomes blind. The writer, Ethan Sachs, does a really good job. The artwork is amazing. I like the artwork. And like I said, it's the reason I think it's kind of fun, too, is because you find he has a daughter in the future. But also the bad guys, if you read the storyline, they won the war. You know, they killed all the superheroes. There's only a few left. So the writer has unlimited potential on what villains he can use, you know, because they all survived and they won. So it's all divided and there's no heroes. So that's why I kind of like the storyline. And it's not that far off. It's only like 3 issues in. So it's a good way to jump on if you want to get into the story. But, you know, like I said, it's just fun to me. I just like the idea that it's a futuristic and like an alternate type of universe.
And you, I know you mentioned Old Man Logan. So he this is kind of the future timeline, which may or may not come to pass, that Old Man Logan, who's in current Marvel time, is from, correct?
Right. I guess that was just a replace because they killed, you know, actually, I don't know, there's so many versions now, but I guess the Logan in the other universe is dead, so they brought old man Logan from the future to the past. I guess so. They bring back Logan. Of course, he's coming back also.
Yeah, and who you said you enjoy the art? Who's handling the art duties on the series?
Oh yeah, hold on. It's Mark. I'm probably gonna say his name wrong. Chichetto,
I think it is.
I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, his art's really cool. So you'd mentioned that Old Man Hawkeye had previously appeared in the Old Man Logan title. Was that so that was before Old Man Logan got time shifted or whatever back to the I don't
right. I mean, if you had to go back to like Wolverine 66, issue 66 to 72, where they kind of did that little like miniseries, but it was a huge hit. I think the fans really liked it, so I think that's why they brought, you know, Old Man Logan into the, you know, to current time. But it was just fun because when you read that series, you already know that, you know, Wolverine, you know, spoiler, he killed all the X-Men because he got, you know, brainwashed a little bit. And the, you know, the world, the U.S. is pretty much divided between, you know, the East and the West. So you got Hawk that controls the West Coast. And I think the East Coast is controlled by Dr. Doom. And the middle is just like, you know, just a wasteland. And so that's why it's kind of fun. You know, you can pretty much do anything you want with the story. And when you read the comics, they have a couple of flashbacks, you know, where, you know, it kind of shows a little bit of the history of Hawkeye and, you know, what happened after the battle was over. So, like I said, they just they could do anything they want with any villains they want to bring into the storyline.
So is it a miniseries or is this an ongoing?
No, it's ongoing. So it's brand new. Like I said, it's just out there. I mean, what I like about comics is like they have different variations of the covers, but sometimes they just go crazy because I think for Old Man Logan, I think they got like 7 or 8 different variant covers.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's how they get a lot of like, oh, I really want that cover because such and such draws that. And then you're like, okay. And then you're like, oh man, that's like $40, but you really want it, so you'll buy it.
Yeah. And so is Old Man Hawkeye, is he just trying to be left alone, or is he out there trying to like make the world a better place? Like, where does he fit in with this dystopian future?
Well, he's not really here anymore. He just kind of takes side jobs, and he's a smuggler, if I guess you can say. And I guess his daughter, you know, loves Hawkeye, the idea, but not her father because he's not a hero anymore. Heroes are pretty much obsolete in this timeline.
Right.
So little by little, you'll see him starting, you know, get back to that fold. And of course, you have cameos with Wolverine, you know, or Old Man Logan. You'll have the cameos of him in there.
Is Hawkeye blind yet?
Not yet. He's getting there.
Okay.
Because you start to notice that he'll start missing because he doesn't miss. He's known for never missing with his arrows, but little by little, he starts to miss. And then he's like, okay, so I got an issue here. And he already knows he's going to go blind soon, but he's not there yet.
Huh. Interesting. Definitely have to check it out.
Oh yeah, like I said, you could do anything you want with these villains because all the villains survived. You know, all the heroes are gone. So you got Venom, you got everybody you can think of is still out there.
Wow. Yeah, it was like, I'm trying to remember original Old Man Logan, like Kingpin has Vegas or something, and Red Skull's right in the White House, and
then if you read the actual series, you find out Wolverine, the land that he like, I guess, rents off of is owned by the Hulks.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to pay rent, you know, to the Hulk that, you know, he should have killed, but he never did. But now the family's huge because they're like a mafia.
Yeah, the Hillbilly Hulks.
Yeah,
I remember that from the original.
Wow.
Oh yeah, it's a fun run. Like I said, if I just like the post-galactic, you know, the future, you know, it all goes to, you know, nothing is, you know, the bad guys win. You know, they finally win.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting take, and it leads to lots of stories. Like you said, it opens it up for the villain. The villains are really kind of the driving force. They become the protagonists, and the heroes are kind of the antagonists. They're the ones that are outnumbered, and yeah, that's sounds really cool.
Oh yeah, it's a fun series. Like I said, if you like the anybody who actually read Wolverine series, and who knows who Old Man Logan is, it's kind of cool to go back and say, well, what happened to Hawkeye? And what's his story?
Yeah, for sure. All right, let me talk about my next book. It's a bit of an older title. It's called 21 Down. It's written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. The pencils are by Jesus Saez. Inks are by Jimmy Palmiotti. He's double dipping on this series. Hopefully he got paid twice. And the colors are by Paul Mounts. So this was actually published in 2002 from DC Comics, but it was under their Wildstorm imprint. And there was only 12 issues put out. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am recommending that you guys read this because I think it's really good. But at the same time, although DC Comics told Jimmy that they were interested in a season two or continuing the series, and Jimmy and Jesus started working on it, then DC changed their mind and said, never mind, we don't want it after all. You know, things like that happen sometimes. So here's the thing though, right? Like Jimmy probably, in my mind, him and Justin Gray would have ended the 12 issues differently than they ultimately did had they known that this was going to be the end of the series, right? Because, I mean, they leave everything open. There's all kinds of plot lines still going. I believe there's two trades out that collect 1 through 6 and then 7 through 12. And they are story arcs, and they do have some resolutions. But as I said, there's a lot of other longer plot threads and deeper story that was meant to continue. And it's criminal that the series didn't continue, because it's really, really good. And the art by Jesus Saez, this is art that was pretty early on in his career. He has improved in my mind since the series came out, but that's not to say that this art isn't awesome. It's a lot of detail. And speaking of art, one thing I didn't mention is, so every issue of the series has painted covers by Joe Jusco, who a lot of comic fans will know from doing like the Marvel Masterpiece series. And I think that he did like the X-Men premium cards or something like that. So the covers are absolutely amazing. The art is spectacular. I would say it's a mature themed a book. There's some sexual situations and a lot of blood and violence. I'll tell you just kind of the background. So there are a pair of brothers. The main character is named Preston Kills. His brother is a detective. His name is Robert Kills. And Preston has a power. And in this version of the DC multiverse, it's kind of, ties into Wildstorm. So they mentioned the Authority and some others. So there are superpowered beings. They do exist. People are aware of them. But Preston, along with a bunch of other people around his same age, were all given powers right around the age of 13 by this mysterious figure known as Herod, who we really don't learn much about in the series. But this figure shows up in their bedrooms in the middle of the night and gives them powers, spouting off some biblical nonsense. He then comes back and visits these same people that he gave powers to on their 21st birthday, and we think kills them. Again, it's not sure. It's one of those longer plot threads that was still being worked on. So Preston is one of these people that has these powers, and that's where the name of the series comes from, the 21 Down. He knows he's going to die on his 21st birthday, because everybody else who's gotten powers from Herod has been killed on their 21st birthday. Herod comes back and that's it. So when the series starts out, he's kind of hiding out. He's working as a tattoo artist and he's just kind of laying low and he's kind of resigned to his fate. He has the ability to see people at the moment of their death or in the moments leading up to their death and sometimes immediately after. So being that his brother is a homicide detective, he often goes to Preston and says, hey, I got this dead body or whatever, come down to the morgue. Preston touches the body, you know, tries to identify who killed him and all this kind of stuff, right? And Preston doesn't like doing it. You know, he's like, I just want to live out my time in peace, so to speak. And so through various helping his brother with different cases and trying to find some kind of meaning in his life, he ends up getting hooked up with this someone who claims to be an FBI agent named Mickey Rinaldi. And she has a lot of information about these other people that have powers and is out there trying to find out who Herod is, trying to investigate. And through the course of the series, we find out that she's actually been suspended from the FBI. There are two other FBI agents, Agent Ishikawa and Agent Sizemore, that are actually the real ones that are still involved with the agency who are trying to track down Herod. But then it opens up another layer when we find out that it's all part of a government program, not Herod himself, but some of these other people that have powers, part of a government program that's run by a man known as Neptune, and that's who Ishikawa and Sizemore are working for. That's who Rinaldi previously had been looking for and now has Rinaldi's daughter, and that's why Rinaldi's doing what she's doing, because she wants to save her daughter from Herod. And meanwhile, Neptune is trying to manipulate all the characters and kind of have his own little kingdom, so to speak. So again, there's a lot of layers there. And in the middle of it, you have Preston Kills, who at the end of the first arc, with some things that happened, decides that, you know what, I'm going to make the rest of my life mean something. You know, his father was a cop, his brother is a cop, and although he's never seen himself as a hero, he feels like he needs to step up and make the rest of his life mean something. And if that means helping out Agent Rinaldi to rescue her daughter or to try to get to the bottom and save the rest of these people who basically have a death sentence on their 21st birthday, then that's what he's going to do. So there are a few other characters that I'll mention. Sam Oslo is an older gentleman confined to a wheelchair. I really wish the story continued, because clearly Jimmy and Justin had something planned for him. We get hints that his past is very mysterious, but he seems to know more about the kind of person that Agent Rinaldi is, and maybe something about Neptune. Seems like he's kind of been through some stuff, if you know what I mean. So it would have been nice to learn more about him. And then the other character that Mickey Rinaldi and Preston Kills meet up with, like right at the end of the series, like 10, 11, and 12, I think he shows up. His name's Jack Lahana, and he has the ability to like bend time, and he has kind of a tragic origin, and he's taken it upon himself to be out there saving as many lives as he can. And he actually, in a way, ends up saving Preston and Mickey. And where the story was going to go for there with his powers to be able to almost roll time back a few minutes could have set up some really interesting things going forward. So again, I think it's criminal that this series didn't continue. I hadn't read it in a long, long time. I'd forgotten that it was even a comic that Jimmy Palmiotti wrote. And the whole reason I dug it up and reread it recently was because Jimmy had posted, he was cleaning his studio and he posted some artwork on Twitter, and he's like, hey, I was cleaning my studio and I came across these never published pages from the second volume or the second season of 21 Down that DC ordered and then canceled that we never got to put out. And the artwork was like really amazing. There was this one that was especially awesome. It was basically Preston walking down the road. It's like this deserted desert highway with like telephone poles running along one side. A lot of negative space kind of summed up who Preston was as a person. Just gorgeous, gorgeous art. You know, pencils by Jesus and inks by Jimmy. And I was like, I totally forgot about that series. I remember it being really good. I'm going to go back and reread it. So that's what I did. And, you know, I enjoyed it. Again, I was frustrated that it didn't continue. But what's funny is, you know, I know Jimmy relatively well. So as I said, I've forgotten that he'd written this. But now that I've read it, it's fresh in my mind. You can guarantee that next time I see him, I'm going to be like, okay, let's go have a drink. And you tell me, like, what your plans for the series was, because I gotta know, man. I gotta know. And he may not even remember, or may not have had it all fleshed out, but you can bet that I'll try to pick his brain and find out Probably have to be off the record, but yeah, 21 Down. It's worth checking out. The artwork's gorgeous. The colors by Paul Mounts. You know, that's a colorist that Jimmy works with often. And he's an interesting colorist when you think about it, because he did a lot of work on the Harley Quinn title, which are very bright kind of primary colors. And that doesn't suit a book like this, right? So the question is, can he transition? The answer is 100% yes. You know, this book is very much darker browns and grays and greens and blues, because it is, you know, somewhat of a more, I don't want to say depressing, but more serious book, right? Where Harley Quinn is more lighthearted and fun. And this book is definitely talking about mature things, death, and your place in life, and there's murder and things like that. So, you know, a primary brightly lit color palette wouldn't suit. And Paul Mounts has no problem handling both. So that's my pick. Second pick, 21 Down. Definitely recommend picking it up. And they're not expensive. I don't know if they're available digitally. I'm pretty sure they probably are. But you shouldn't have any problem tracking them down, or the trades. I'm sure they're not very expensive, because it's not a really well-known or well-remembered series. And that's another reason I kind of wanted to mention it, because it deserves to be noticed. It's a really, really incredible series. And as I said, I obviously wish it could have continued. What do you have for your second pick, Nick?
I actually brought a comic that technically started in 2002, though the volume I'm going to talk about starts in 2004. The Ultimates 2, which is infamous for both being one of the main influences on at least the look and kind of the tone of Avengers, as well as being a very dark, controversial look at the characters. Just Friday, Mark Millar had some interviews where he was talking about how excited he was when Zach Penn, the author of the screenwriter of the Avengers, told him he was adapting his book, because that's what he considered the main, even though it has a lot of storylines, including the classic Loki invading Earth storyline. A lot of what's taken is from the Ultimates. And it's called the Ultimates because the other part of the interview from Friday, Mark Millar said that Marvel wouldn't let him call it the Avengers. This is all, of course, part of the Ultimate line, which is kind of like DC Earth One, I guess you could say, where it's, of course, it started with Ultimate Spider-Man, Bendis doing that. I believe Fantastic Four came next, and then Millar did X-Men, and then the studio asked, Marvel asked Millar if he wanted to do Wolverine next, and he's like, I want to do the Avengers. And they said, the Avengers is a dead brand. We'll call it the Ultimates instead, because no one wants to read about the Avengers in 2002, which is hilarious now in 2018 with Avengers Age of Ultron, Infinity War coming out, that it was such a dead brand to Marvel, they wouldn't even let him call his comics the Avengers. Though it's called the Ultimates. So before I get to the Ultimates 2, I just want to briefly discuss what the Ultimates was. Again, it's written by Mark Millar with pencilers Brian Hitch. He does the art. Inkers are Paul Neary and Brian Hitch. And the colorist is Laura Martin with Larry Molinar. Basically, it's the Avengers as imagined as realistically as possible, even more so than the movies, to a point the movies pulled back on it to be a little more goofy. In a very post 9/11 George W. Bush era, it's that type of Captain America and that type of Iron Man. It's in this case, the Avengers literally aren't their own group. They are formed by S.H.I.E.L.D. The Ultimates, still the first time we've seen Nick Fury portrayed as looking like Samuel L. Jackson, is in this universe, which again comes a lot of imagery from the Avengers and even other Captain America, Tony, like Iron Man movies come straight from these books, like direct line pulls, direct like shot pulls. So the basic idea is S.H.I.E.L.D., a government agency, of course, with the Triskelion and everything, just as we see in Winter Soldier, puts together the Avengers as there wouldn't even be the Sokovia Accords in this comic, because they literally are, from the beginning, commissioned by the government to carry out missions in the Middle East. So there's a lot of Middle East paranoia and terrorism paranoia and homeland security type stuff in these books based on the time period. Like Captain America, he's kind of the same character, but they play a lot more with him being a man out of time, and that in some comics he's dating Janet, aka Wasp, and she gets frustrated that they're visiting they're spending all their time with 90-year-old people and not people her age. And he's also very conservative compared to the Captain America we see in the movies because he's used to the 1940s. He like even criticizes what she wears sometimes. Iron Man is, again, kind of the billionaire, but he's part of the team because he discovers he has cancer and wants to give back. Thor is literally what everyone considers a crazy hippie who escaped a mental institution. And he claims he's the Lord of Thunder, but everyone just thinks he's a hippie hanging out with communes and stuff. And Hulk, of course, is just, I guess, basic Hulk with Banner and Hank Pym's also a character. He's Giant Man, not Ant-Man. And the whole idea is that they're both trying to develop the best way to make super soldiers. So they're experimenting with all this stuff. So in the first Ultimates, the Hulk ends up being the main bad guy in typical first Avengers fashion. So the second comic picks up the Ultimates 2, which I think you should read Ultimates 1 to get to Ultimates 2, but Ultimates 2 has a more cinematic and worthwhile storyline, I would say. So let's see. So we start Ultimates 2. They're keeping Banner in a cage, not unlike his cage in they put Loki in the Avengers, a big glass cage, but it's also his living residence after the events of the first one. Thor gets visited by someone from Asgard who no one else can see in the bar, further making him seem crazy, that warns him that Loki's up to something. Of course, in this world, also PR is very important. It's just as big a part of the Avengers as having the team. So believe it's Betty Ross is their PR agent. So it's a rocky thing with her and Bruce. This Ultimates 2 kind of covers a bunch of stuff where other countries are also doing their superheroes. They're creating super soldiers. So like that's why there's Captain Britain and France and stuff. Is that Europe's been working on the same projects. The trial of the Hulk ends up happening in this storyline, which doesn't end so great for him. Meanwhile, we kind of see what's my favorite part about it is we see the reverse of Captain America. There's an early excursion to a Middle East nuclear facility, which I believe is in northern Iraq, it says on the panel. And, you know, they did their big action scene, raid it, whatever. And then he, like, tells some kid to get out of the way. And later that kid is part of Iraq's program for the Super Soldier Serum. So he becomes, like, Iraq's Captain America. And all the while, Loki is feeding information. He's going under the name Gunnar Goleman, and he's a weapons designer who claims that Thor is a crazy guy who just stole this hammer and this belt that he designed. So he actually sends all the Ultimates or the Avengers after Thor, and they take Thor down. Meanwhile, Loki is building his own army called the Liberators using the superheroes from North Korea, Iraq, Iran. I know I'm forgetting some, but those type of nations that are obviously still not really friendly with Russia. There's definitely a Russian hero. So it's all very dark. The final battle results in some very gruesome deaths. Everyone very much has, like I said, that kind of early 2000s feel about them, where there's a panel, I think it's maybe in the first Ultimates, where I remember there being Freedom Fries and stuff at the time, but there's a scene where Captain America's almost beaten and he's like, do you think this A on my helmet stands for France? Like, I'll never give up. So it very much ties into all of that feeling of that time period. And it's nice that Joss Whedon and Zach Penn took it back a notch, because some of it's too much in realism. Like, I don't want to see Thor as a crazy hippie, but it makes for a very interesting, too realistic version of the Avengers that at times can be a very uncomfortable read, but it's kind of fascinating seeing this take on them. And of course it's from Mark Millar, who did Old Man Logan, which we were already discussing.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah. I can't hear you, Jay. You might be muted.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
No, not at all. So you guys might be surprised to learn that I've never read The Ultimates or The Ultimates 2. I've read a lot of the Ultimate line. I've read Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Spider-Man, read a lot of the Fantastic Four stuff. But again, this is sacrilege probably for, you know, long lot of listeners, but I'm not a big fan of Brian Hitch and the what are the term they use for a wide screen or whatever it is that they use. I don't know. I don't have a problem with his panel layouts or his panel structure. It more has to do with his rendering. I just, for some reason, it's off-putting to me. And so I remember picking up the Ultimates, the Ultimates Volume 1, Number 1. I remember picking it up and looking through it and being like, reading it and thinking, it's okay. But the art turned me off, so I never picked it up. So I know that that's where they pulled a lot of stuff from, a lot of the look of the Avengers and everything, but
especially Captain.
But let me go you one more that you guys are going to be even more shocked. I still haven't seen Avengers or Avengers Age of Ultron or Thor 2 or Thor. Is there a third Thor movie?
Ragnarok. Thor. Right.
Quite a few.
I know, right? Because this is Manny and I have this conversation all the time. It's like, whenever there comes a time where I have free time, so to speak, free time, I could be watching Arrow or The Flash or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or getting caught up on the Marvel movies or any kind of time to do anything like that. If I do those things, I'm thinking in the back of my head, I should be reading comics right now. I'd rather read comics than go see, like, but for some reason, it doesn't necessarily apply to the DC movies, and I feel like that's because I feel bad that the DC movies haven't been so successful yet. So I'm going to go try to help them out so there can continue to be. And yeah, it totally doesn't make sense at all, because if you had told 12-year-old me that there was going to be all these awesome comic movies, I definitely would be in. I finally watched Captain America Winter Soldier probably about 9 months ago. Yeah, it was really, really good. I did start like, okay, I looked up one of those Marvel Cinematic Universe like viewing orders and I started watching everything. So I rewatched a lot of the things that I'd seen already, just trying to watch it. And I think the next movie in my viewing order that I'm supposed to watch is Avengers, but I just haven't made, and it's making the time, right? It's choosing to sit down and watch Avengers instead of, you know, reading comics. And so that is the next one that when I do finally bite the bullet. And I've heard good things, you know, I've heard like Avengers is great and whatever, but that's the other thing. So many people have seen it. I worry that it won't live up to my expectations. And, you know, I heard good things about Spider-Man Homecoming. I want to see that. I did go see Captain America Civil War in theaters. I did go see that. I did enjoy that. So I will get caught up eventually. I will read Ultimates, both Volume 1, Volume 2. And I think there was a Volume 3 also.
I haven't read Volume 3 because I heard it's not as good, but I've read Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah, I will. I mean, someday, you know, when I'm old and gray and retired and don't have to work a day job, maybe then I'll have. But the problem is they're going to keep making comics. I'll never cut.
See, for me, it's kind of the opposite. Like, I'm into comics because of the movie boom. Going back farther than even Iron Man, but like Spider-Man.
Right.
Like 2002 Spider-Man is why I'm into comics.
Yeah, that's the way it is for a lot of people. But see, for me, I don't need really cool movies to want to read the comics. I just want to read the comics. But anyway, let's move on to Jay's second pick. What do you have, Jay, for your second recommended reading pick?
For myself, well, it's going to be with the Archie comics, believe it or not.
I'm not familiar. So, I mean, I know who Archie is, obviously, but and I did read the first maybe four or five issues of the new Mark Waid run. I know he's since moved on, but yeah, that's
cool. Yeah.
I don't know much about it, so go right ahead.
Well, what I'm reading is it's called Jughead, The Hunger, and it did like a one-shot issue, and it's not really kiddish. It's more adult, so Jughead is a werewolf. And the one shot, you know, he goes around killing people. And I mean, it's pretty graphic. Comic is like, isn't for kids whatsoever. And it's written by Frank Terry, who did other stuff for Marvel and DC. And also Daredevil, Wolverine, and the X-Men. So he's got some experience writing. Like I said, it's a dark twist to it. And it was just a one shot. And I bought it thinking, hey, this would be kind of cool to get. It'd be kind of fun. And it was. But they kept doing reprints because they kept selling out. It was that good. So now it's started its own little run. So I think they're up to issue 6 now. And what makes it fun for me is Jughead, you know, you find out that he's got a clan, his family, they're all werewolves. And he doesn't realize if you bite somebody, you know, they become a werewolf unless you take their head off. And then you'll have Veronica and Betty. So Betty is pretty much like she's a hunter. She hunts down werewolves and vampires. You also find out that Veronica is actually a vampire. Her whole family are vampires, and they hunt the werewolves. So it's kind of neat because I always like the genre of vampires and werewolves and all that battle. So they put it all into the Archie books, and it's just it's really good. The artwork, like I said, is not for kids. It's very bloody, and they do show a lot of torn limbs and everything else and guts and everything. So it's just an adult version of, you know, the Archie world.
And who's the artist on the book?
You got two, actually. It's Pat and Tim Kennedy.
And is it in the style, you know, Archie, you know, Dan Parent, all
this? No, guys? Not even. It's totally different. I mean, you could tell the characters are Betty, you know, because they got the kind of the same, you know, the look and the freckles, right, for Archie. But it's more adult, like I said, more adult content. If you try to get that, you put it next to like an original, like an not original, but, you know, an ongoing Archie, you know, kid version. Right. They don't look remotely like, you know, that one's dark, darker colors, you know, with blood. It's almost like they got the idea from Zenscope. You know how they got their dark versions?
Yep.
That's where they kind of the style they kind of got going on with the Jughead series.
Well, I know a few years ago, and I don't know the reasons that Archie decided to do this, but they did those Afterlife with Archie books, and they were super popular too. And it was basically zombies. You know, maybe it was the popularity of The Walking Dead, and I think part of the reason that I'm not sure they're still putting those out. I don't think they are. And they fell behind. They weren't on any kind of regular schedule. So I think eventually they kind of let them go by the wayside. But do you know, so that's kind of an alternate version of Archie as well. Is this Jughead the Hunger? Is it set in that same, like, Afterlife with Archie world?
No, I think it's two different worlds, because I collected, like, like for me, when I first started collecting comics, my first comic I ever got was Archie Goes to Riverdale, number 100. I had the chicken pox, and I hated reading as a kid. I couldn't stand reading. So I think I was like 11 or 12, and I had the chicken pox. And my mom came home. She said, "Hey, I got you this comic." And I was like, okay. So I read it, and I fell in love with the Archie world, and I fell in love with comics. And that's what kind of got me going, you know, to collect comics. So for me, it was fun that they actually started doing this adult thing for, you know, the Archie world. But the two, the question that you asked, the two worlds don't come too close together. I think that the series they did just see what it was like a trial, I think that's what I'm going to go with. But it did get fell by the wayside. They just stopped doing it. So I was like, okay, you know. And then after that, they did Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. But it was more, again, you know, a darker version of, you know, Sabrina. The covers were very dark. The artwork was kind of gloomy and sad, you know, very dark colors. But it was still bloody. And, you know, she was, you know, actually messing with people and their lives and killing people. So that was pretty fun. Then that just kind of stopped. And now they got Jughead the Hunger. And like I said, it was just a one shot. But I think people really liked it a lot. So they're just going to keep going with it.
So is that a recent one?
Yeah, like I said, The Hunger is just, it's, I think they're only to issue 5 or 6 now.
Okay.
But I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of a little, I think I'm maybe a month behind books. Like I said, I've been a collector forever. I think I got about 30 years of collecting, and I think I pull maybe 52 titles a month I get. So like some of you guys were talking about, I got to take time to, you know, sit back and read on the weekend.
Oh yeah,
I was just wondering because currently I read soon they're starting a Veronica as a Vampire series, so I was wondering if those
right. That's going to be the spinoff, I think, later this summer.
Okay.
But like, yeah. I said, she's the vampire family, and then Betty and Archie, their families are the hunters. So I guess it would be the Van Helsings of the storyline, I guess you would say.
Yeah, it's really interesting that Archie's taken this turn. You know, you think of Archie as this, you know, wholesome storyline, you know, the characters are all stuck back in the 50s, and you know, it's very much Americana. And then they came out with Afterlife with Archie, where zombies, they've got Jughead the Hunger, where he's you know, werewolf, they've got the Veronica as a Vampire coming, they got the Sabrina Teenage Witch that I think Jay mentioned that was super popular, and I think they're bringing that back. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, they actually relaunched Archie. And I find it interesting. Here we are talking about Archie with all these kind of mythic monsters, if you will. And you know, the number of the last like Archie comic before they rebooted with number one, which was written by Mark Waid with art by Fiona Staples. So the previous title series of Archie that had gone on, you know, since the 50s, it ended with number 666. So yes. With all these other Archie / monster titles, you wonder if that was on purpose. I mean, it didn't seem like it was on purpose. To me, every time I see that, I'm like, man, Why would you not want to go just one more? Why do you want to end on six? I mean, maybe there's something going on over there in the Archie comics world.
Yeah, because I was kind of curious myself, so I did some research and online and did some looking around. I guess Archie was doing good with the books. They usually do a lot more sales with a double digest. You know, you go to the grocery store, they always got those double digests. That's where they make their money, really. And I guess they were trying to find like a way to relaunch the series. So I guess that's why they stopped a lot of the books and revamped them, because they had Betty and Veronica relaunched, and they only made like 6 or 7 copies. But I'm trying to remember who the artist was. Maybe it has some Frank Child covers and some other ones.
Betty and Veronica, I think it was Adam Hughes.
Yeah, Adam Hughes. Yeah, so those were the reason they were got so popular was the covers, you know. Yeah, and I think after that, they're like, well, let's just try something a little darker. And I guess I decided just to restart the whole company, because now they got that TV show, which I don't watch because it's very. I'm not a teenager, so I can't watch that anymore. They are redoing the Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which is supposed to be based off the comic. So it's going to be a little darker. So I'm kind of curious about watching that.
Yeah, and that's a spinoff of Riverdale, I think, which has already been CW's weird teen angsty dark almost remake of a Teen Wolf version of.
Oh yeah, because Jughead in that is like a little gangbanger. So his family, so he's a little thug in that, which is kind of funny. You're like, Jughead, he's supposed to be the nice kid, but he's not in this one whatsoever. So I think for them, I think that it helped out the company because it kept them afloat, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it 100%. I mean, I think it was time to kind of bring Archie as a character and the rest of the characters into kind of more of the modern world. Cause like I said, they'd always been kind of stuck in the '50s, and I thought Mark Waid did a good job. You know, it's Fiona Staples art, so that was done well. I think I read like the first 4 or 5 issues and I enjoyed it for what it was. It wasn't anything I stuck with. I don't think I necessarily was their target audience, but I don't blame them for that whatsoever. I don't blame them for doing these kind of Archie monster mashups because people seem to really like them. But I still do find it strange that it's fine they decided to relaunch and reboot and modernize everything, and it's fine they're doing these monster mashups. I still think it's strange that they decided to end the old series with number 666, though.
I think it was just a good way for them to go, hey, you know what, since we stopped, let's just go and do this.
Yeah, let's stop with 666. But,
like I said, I've been collecting Archie since I was a kid, because that's what started me in the world of comics, and, you know, I went from there, but... I still got that comic my mom gave me. I got it framed hanging in my wall because that's what started the whole thing for me. And I always collected Archie still for 30 years. So when they did the relaunch, it was kind of exciting for me. It's like, hey, you know, they're trying something different. Because, man, I still collected it, you know, for years, but it was nothing special about it. You know, right. Just like, okay, I got it. But it was just, you know, they're just going with the times. You saw, oh, then I got cell phones in the comic. Well, that's cool. They finally got cell phones. So, you know, they try to keep with the times, but doing this revamp, I think it's more fun for me as a fan and a collector.
Right on. And I think, you know, like I said, the Afterlife with Archie, I read those. Those are really cool. I haven't checked out Jughead the Hunger yet, but I have heard that it's been getting a lot of good critical reception. So that's good to know. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up this episode of Recommended Reading. Hope you all enjoyed it. Don't forget to go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure to check out all the other coverage on pop culture, TVs, movies, video games, all that kind of good stuff. If you want to follow The Comic Source on Twitter, twitter.com/TheComicSource is where you can find us there. Also, do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those platforms. We always announce new episodes on all three places. Also, all our convention coverage can be found on Instagram. So once again, thanks for joining us, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.